again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast. We're on episode number 131, and we are the podcast that talks about all things Orlando City and Orlando Pride related. We are the, I guess, associated podcast with themainland.com. And I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of that particular website. Joining me, as always, David Rowe up in Tallahassee. Dave, what do you say?
I say that I'm feeling very associated today, given that intro. So, yeah.
We're very disassociated, actually.
we're dis something.
All right, so we got a lot to talk about, Dave, I think. There's a couple of games that we've had since you and I last talked on the internet airwaves. Starting with a trip to D.C., or actually Boyd's, Maryland, to play D.C. United in the U.S. Open Cup.
Yes, indeed.
And that was sans head coach, only an interim head coach. Bobby Murphy took over the team, took them to D.C., and we got a new lineup, David.
Yeah, a new lineup that I can't remember if you I think both of us said, they'll probably just – Bobby Murphy won't mess with a lot of stuff. And lo and behold, he goes and proves us wrong.
Yes, I want to give a shout-out to Ryan Smith, who talked about a 5-4-1 with three center backs on the U.S. Open Cup game was a 3-4-3. We had a question about from somebody saying, you know, do you see this happening? And it was, you know, 5-4-1. And I, a long time ago, said, back in March, said, no, we're not going to do that because of the, you know, the center back situation with the depth. That's probably not likely. And then also, somebody had asked recently, you know, do you think it would happen? And I said, no. So, of course, I'm wrong. And Bobby Murphy did surprise everybody, including Ben Olsen, the coach of DC United. He said so after the game that he was not expecting that. I don't think anybody was expecting that, Dave. But it was an interesting time to break that out, knowing that 3 days after that game there would be another match and against Montreal. And not only because of the short week, but also because of the fact that Lamine Sané hadn't played in over a month. And all of a sudden, he's not only starting, but he's going to go not 90 minutes, Dave, but 120 minutes.
And he wasn't the only one either. It was a little bit insane. You're right, Bobby. Bobby surprised the world on that one. Matter of fact, I remember you tweeting something about it, and your shock.
I said, "Let's get weird, Bobby."
Yeah, right. and weird he did get. So it was. And like you said, Ben Olsen was, you know, he came out fully admitted. He's like, yep, nope, had no idea. Took us by surprise.
Yeah, it wasn't a great game, I will say. It was a workmanlike game. The Lions went out there, and of course, right off the bat, there's a 90-minute weather delay, so that's going to even make life more difficult and miserable. So 90 minutes goes, you know, go by, and then you start really late, and the team has to come back out and do warm-ups again, and then they kick off, and DC is like all over Orlando City, and it didn't really take them long to score, and you're behind again because that's what Orlando City does. It falls behind.
Oh, every single time, and we should give a shout out to our last guest who warned us of the propensity for lightning delays at the Maryland Soccerplex.
Yeah, yeah. It was Jason Anderson definitely called that. He called a weather delay, and so it was. And you know, it's good to see that Orlando City responded. A goal from Justin Miram, just a routine shot. But I mean, sometimes I've been saying it basically since the now 7-game losing streak in the league started. Get some shots on target. You never know what's going to happen. And Miram gets a shot on goal. It's right at Steve Clark, but he can't handle the wet ball. And it was pouring at the beginning of that game. And it goes in the net, and it's 1-1. And, you know, who would have thought that would be all done scoring?
Yeah, it was nice to, like you said, to actually get a ball on frame, have it go in, kind of la-di-da, but it is what has been missing, and good for Justin on doing that. It, as you said, ugly game between rain delays or lightning delay, wet pitch, rain, all of it. None of it was there. There wasn't anything pretty about it. And then it, to go the length that it did, also not pretty.
Yeah, and it looked like it was another one of those games where Orlando City could not score, even though no matter what chances the team had, they it took them a while to start getting some shots on target, and then Steve Clark actually did make a couple of really nice saves. He absolutely robbed Josue Coleman in the late in the thing. So late in the, I think it was late in the regulation or just after, maybe just after the start of extra time. But it was another one of those games. And at the end of this thing, you look up and you go, 21 shots, Dave, three on target. And now we're going to penalties, a team that can't hit the net. So what happens? Five for five hitting the net, except when one got saved, but it was on target. So.
Well, you go into that and you're like, as you say, they can't seem to hit it, but for whatever, evidently, if the ball's just sitting there, then that's been the whole problem this whole time, is they've had to be trying to shoot while the ball's been moving.
I
So
guess
if we could
so.
just get the other teams to let us put the ball in place and take shots, I think we can win games.
Yeah, I mean, there's too worried about defenders and angles and things like that, and I guess you
Yeah, well.
can't worry about technique when you got all that going on. It's only when there's no defenders and you're right in the middle that you don't have to worry. The technique is just second nature at that point. But yeah, so it was nice to see the team come out and do well in penalties in advance. I want to stress this because I hear people talk about the win in a penalty shootout and all of this, and I think to myself, it's a draw, okay? The team didn't win, it drew. It just used this shootout mechanism to advance because you have to have some way to figure out who gets to move on because they don't do replays like the FA Cup or whatever. So it was a draw. It was not a loss, but it was not a win. And it was nice to see that the team advanced, and it was pretty dramatic. And if you're going to go on a road and be in the miserable rainy conditions, at least you should get something out of it. And Orlando City did that.
Let me be very clear. I hate penalty kicks, or when it goes down to PKs. I can't stand a match being decided that way. Except when it works out in our favor, let's be honest. So I was, it was very late after all the delays, and I'm, watching that, trying not to wake up, the people in the house when I'm, yelling that as each one goes in. But you're right. So I mean, we advance. Of course, no surprise. Neither of us predicted that. We both predicted a loss. You 3-1, me 2-1, and one of those times where I'm really glad we were wrong, even though we're wrong all the time. But this time, I was really glad.
Yeah, me too. I gotta say that the whole thing really the tone was set really early in the penalty kicks. Will Johnson slots his home, and then Yamil Assad steps up and is denied by the landlord, Earl Edwards Jr. with the stop. And Earl Edwards had some big saves in that game. Not a lot of tough saves, but some pretty close in saves. And when the ball is wet, half the battle is not putting that rebound out where somebody can pounce on it and put it in. So I'd say overall for that match, Earl's going to get my man of the match.
Absolutely, if for no other reason than the save on the penalty kick, but also the other one that was between his legs that he reached back with the left hand and managed to keep from going in. It was just odd. But I mean, it made all the difference. So yeah, he did have he had a really good game in what is a messy, ugly game. But if your goalie can do that, then that's, you know, he did exactly what was expected of him, and hats off to him.
Absolutely. And Josue Coleman did a nice job coming in off the bench and providing some energy. He was very dangerous. Probably should have scored a goal or two, but Clark did rob him blind on one shot, and then he missed the net on another one, but not by much. He had an opportunity with the net empty, but he was at a really severe angle, and he didn't get it on frame. So that was a that would have been one he'd have been kicking himself for if he hadn't scored the winning penalty and advanced his team in the tournament. So good job by him. Good job by Earl to stop that one that you mentioned. It was a weird header that got deflected. It was almost the case of Justin Meram scoring for both teams because it came off his foot. And I think it was Meram. Yeah, it was Meram. I'm pretty sure. I can't remember if it was him or Kleschen, but I'm pretty sure it was Meram. He got the boot up, and the ball just kind of hit it at a weird angle and just squirted right at Earl Edwards Jr. So the bottom line is the tournament's still alive. They're in the quarterfinals. This equals the team's deepest run in the tournament, which has been done twice previously, once in 2015 and then once in the USL era. The team has lost both of those quarterfinal matchups to the Chicago Fire. And the good thing is, Dave, they're not playing the Chicago Fire. They're playing at the Philadelphia Union in July.
That's correct. No Fire, only the Union to take on. And, as weird as this season's been, I almost kind of feel good about the Open Cup, which means it's going to come back and, bite me in the rear end. But, if you can get out of a extra time PK game like that to advance, I'll take it every time. And if the same thing happens against Philadelphia and we advance again, I'm good with that too.
Yeah, unfortunately, if there's another team that's good in the U.S. Open Cup that's not typically good in MLS play besides Chicago, it's the Philadelphia Union, who have gotten to
True.
a couple of semifinals in recent years. I think a finals not too long ago. So it's going to be interesting. We'll see if the team has a new coach before then. We'll see how strongly they feel about that competition when they come in and how they approach that. That, I guess, we'll put a bow on the U.S. Open Cup game, and we'll talk a little bit about the MLS match in Montreal, which was another matter altogether. I guess is the easiest way for me to put it. Okay, so Dave, the Montreal game, it was the second straight game against Montreal in league play, and
Part deux.
Montreal had won the first one 3-0. Surely Orlando City would get its revenge, but no, it would not happen because that was just a dog of a game. And I don't just mean by Orlando City because, three shots on goal on Wednesday, one, Dave, one shot, one lousy shot on goal on Saturday night.
Oon.
It was not a good game. It was a game that was certainly there for the taking, but Orlando did the thing that it always does and gives up the first goal, and this time in just a heartbreaking fashion because
Yeah.
Mateo Mancosu just sent a screamer of a cross in, and Lamine Sané just tried to do a routine, nod it out for a corner and get it out of here and make sure it's not dangerous. But instead, he didn't get a good enough contact on the ball, and it skipped off of him a bit, and beat Joe Bendik to the near post and made it one nothing. So 2 games against Montreal, and Orlando City scored two of their goals.
Yeah, that's not good. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that that's not a way to win games against any team. Yeah, poor Sané. That's one of those ones. Like you say, I mean, he's just trying to make a good play, and. Maybe he needed more hair. I don't know, but whatever it was, it didn't work out.
Grow some hair, Sonic.
Oh, some hair. You could have gotten that one over the crossbar. Dang
You're
it.
brutal, Dave. You're brutal. Yeah, it was. I want to just pause that right there because Going into this game, I thought, man, it's going to be interesting. I wonder what we're going to get. I wonder if it's going to be like Tony Rocha and Chris Schuler at center back, or maybe one of the three from Wednesday can maybe be paired with somebody fresh. But no, Bobby comes back with the 3-4-3 again, and he plays five guys that went 120 minutes in a waterlogged field on a waterlogged field on Wednesday. And my immediate thought on seeing that lineup was, this is not good, Dave. This is not a good thing.
Maybe Bobby thought that he surprised everybody the first time with that, and nobody would expect those guys to come out and play, and so it would be another surprise.
Well, the problem is that the teams, it's only on like cartoons where people fall down in shock.
Oh,
It's
that's
not like a
right.
real thing that people do. They don't just like keel over and let you score goals on them. But yeah, so it was all three center backs played 120 minutes in the rain on Wednesday, and then up front, your oldest midfielders in Kletschen and Merum both played 120 minutes. Like, really, really, we're gonna put them back out there? Okay, let's see what happens. Well, we saw what happened. It was just a butt ugly game, I guess. There's no other way to say it. Of course, Ignacio Piatti got his mandatory league sanctioned goal against Orlando City.
I think it's required,
Yeah,
not
it
just
is.
sanctioned. It's actually required. It's a
Yes,
part of
it's in
everybody's
his
contract.
contract. Yeah,
Yeah.
so Piatti gets yet another one against Orlando City, and it's a 2-0 game. And really, there's nothing much you can say about it. I guess Sonny nearly made up for his error with a shot on goal, the only shot on goal. So maybe the center backs need to play forward since they can put the ball in the net.
You know what? Call up Bobby and tell him that, because nothing would be bigger surprise than the center backs playing forward.
Yeah, we're going with a 4-4-2 with Tarek and Sané up front because they've scored the last two goals that Orlando City has scored
Trey, Dom Dwyer is going to
in
be
this
at
club.
center back.
Oh, it's crazy. I don't mean to make little of the, or belittle the seventh loss in a row, a club record, but not the longest in the league this year. We still have time to set that. Colorado lost eight in a row earlier, but
Well, it's one of those things where we either laugh about it or we cry about it, and I prefer to laugh about it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, once Montreal got the goal, the own goal, they just said, you know what? We're parking. It's a park job. And dared Orlando City to break them down. Orlando City didn't break them down often, and when they did, they could not hit the net. They could just absolutely not hit the net because why would you? Why would you hit a net? Why would you be a professional soccer player and actually put a shot on the goal frame?
To be fair, it wasn't penalty kicks.
There was no spot kicks.
There was no spot
I
kick,
don't even know
so.
that there was even a legitimate half chance to get a penalty in that game for Orlando City. I think the closest may have been Mueller going down in the box, but he had already lost control, and there was really nothing in that. That was definitely never a penalty. So,
Well, that's because Mueller was the only one that had any kind of legs to get forward enough to be able to possibly get a foul drawn on him.
yeah, I mean, I almost hesitate to ask for a man of the match for this game because it was garbage. It was just absolute garbage soccer from a five of the 11 just looked like they were running and putting. And, I thought there were some decent moments with the defense. I thought Yuri Rossel, who was one of the players that didn't play on Wednesday, played very well. And I guess the other lone good thing really that came of it is we got Scott Sutter back on the pitch late in the game as he came in as a substitute, and he actually made that right side a lot more dangerous after he was introduced and had a couple of nice crosses into the area and some good interplay. He had one moment where he had a cross blocked, and he hustled all the way back to be the one guy who thwarted a breakaway. So he was, really hustling out there. It was good to see him out there, and for that effort and for the energy he brought, I'll give him my man of the match.
I have to agree. He did a great job of reminding you why we've missed him. Like you said, with just getting up and down the field, doing crosses, which is something that he is exceptional at. Yeah, I mean, Sutter for me as well. Mueller, I love Mueller. I really do. I mean, there was no quit in that kid. Regardless, yeah, Scott gets my man of the match as well.
So seven L's on the bounce, and it isn't going to get any easier.
No, it actually
Because
gets harder.
going to Atlanta this weekend, and it's looking ahead at the schedule, it could be 10. It could be. I mean, the league record's 12, Dave, and I it wouldn't shock me if this team set a new league record for losses in a row. It wouldn't shock me if they went out to Atlanta and won. It just nothing would shock me about this team. I guess
Well, I'm sure.
I would be a little shocked if they won at Atlanta, actually, but it wouldn't be the most surprised I've ever been at this team. But I didn't think that this team during the six-game winning streak, the way they were playing, and even the way they lost some of those first few games of the losing streak, I didn't think this team was capable of losing seven games in a row, and they proved me wrong, Dave.
They've done a really good job of proving us wrong all year. They proved us wrong against Montreal again. You predicted a 2-1 loss. I predicted a 2-2 draw. You were more right than I was in a 2-0 loss. But yeah, still, since we've as listeners will know, we've started actually keeping track of this stuff. We have yet to be right
Well,
once.
and that's not gonna change, so let's not
No,
even
it's not. And if we were to
bring it
actually go
up.
back and look at it, I'm sure we would find that we were wrong almost every time.
Pretty much. Well, it's hard to predict exact scores. I mean, we put ourselves out there every week. So I'll start with Bobby Murphy's comments after the game. Bobby is he was very direct, and he immediately said, "I didn't get this team ready to play. I didn't make the right team selection." He took the blame until he didn't.
Yeah.
He then said, "All I can do is ask guys if they can go, and if they say yeah, I put them out there." And so he took the blame, and then he threw the players under the bus for essentially lying about their ability to. What was really interesting is he said that Chris Mueller. He said, "Hey, Chris, what can you give me?" Chris said, 30 minutes, maybe 45." So that was honesty. But all the other guys, the guys that started, apparently said, "Yeah, good to go. Feeling great."
Generally speaking, professional athletes will not ever say they can't go. It's a mentality thing, and it's one of the reasons why they're able to reach the high level that they've reached as an athlete, is that they will always go. Even when they're injured, tired, doesn't matter, they will go, and they are the worst judges of their ability, which is where the coach and the training staff and everybody else comes in to go, yeah, no, you're wrong. And you're going to sit for a bit, which unfortunately, that so I give it up to Bobby initially for saying that he was at fault, but then, like you said, he kind of threw it back on him. So got to take it. He's at zero now. He was plus one, then negative one. So
Yeah, it was a
yeah,
draw.
there was a draw. Yeah, you know he's interim coach or not, doesn't matter. He's still the current coach, and he's got to be able to make that assessment and make those decisions.
What I like about Bobby is he's a hardworking guy who's very no nonsense and very direct and very honest. He seems like he gives you an honest answer, and if this isn't good enough, I obviously didn't do a good enough job, and all of that, and you take that and you say okay, but there's a reason he's been in charge of sort of a liaison between the club and the youth system, and he's been in charge of youth setups elsewhere. Is he's not an MLS coach. This is not his thing, and he's he absolutely made the wrong decision to play those five players after going 120 minutes in the rain on Wednesday. That you have to know. He told us that Sasha Kleschen ran 17 kilometers on Wednesday. How can you put a 32-year-old out there on Saturday night to run another 10? It defies logic. Miram's not that much younger, and he went. I mean, he came out in the 119th, I think, because I think his replacement, Jose Villarreal. I think Jose's first touch of the game was when he carried the ball to the spot for penalty kicks,
Yeah, pretty much.
and he was the only one that missed. But I mean, he didn't miss. He put it on frame. It was saved.
It should be telling that when one of your young guys who I've said on this podcast reminds me of the Energizer Bunny, says he can go 30 to 45.
Yeah.
You should be able to go, well then, the 30-year-olds are not going to be able to do more than that.
Right. Now you look at these guys and you go, okay, Sané, just coming off an injury, Dave. He was arguably not 90-minute fit on Wednesday, and he went 120 minutes. And you're asking him to do another 90 3 days later. And Jonathan Spector has only played a game and a half since he'd come back.
So, all right, I'm going to retract the Sané needs to grow some more hair thing, because it had nothing to do with hair. It had to do with the fact that he didn't have the legs to get up that little extra bit to actually, get the head on the ball properly. So, my apologies, Lamine. That was not anything that had to do with your hair.
Yeah, and I will never tell somebody else that they need to grow more hair, given my current situation. It had, for me, like I said, when I saw the lineup, it had disaster written all over it. Two guys coming off, just coming back from injury, who had just went 120 minutes in the rain. Two of your older offensive players who went 120 minutes in the rain. It just, none of that looked good for me. And Bobby said, I thought that the guys, from what we saw in training, from what they were telling me about how they felt, I thought that they would be able to get in out there and give it a go. I thought we'd get a lift from some of the guys who didn't play. And I thought Rosell did play well, and I thought that Dwyer did bring his usual energy, but he was largely canceled out of the game by the fact that Montreal was just parking the bus. And Coleman had good moments. He was a late substitute on Wednesday night. He had some good moments, but again, he's still just not quite where he needs to be right now. And I think you could say that about a lot of guys. And I just have to wonder, because that's all we can do, of how those two games would have played out had they waited and not fired the coach when they did. Now, I'm not saying what they did was right or wrong, because I think I've made pretty clear my feelings on Jason Christ in last week's show and all throughout the season. And my point has always been, I wasn't at that point yet. I wasn't there yet. They were there. They were at that point. They made the choice to fire him, but I wasn't there yet. And I may have gotten to that point, but who knows? And we'll never know really what would have happened with those two games had Jason not been fired. But I can tell you this: he probably isn't going to play three center backs for 210 minutes in 4 days.
No, and the argument will be, well, he would have played his usual formation that DC would have known about. We would be out of Open Cup, and then we might have lost the Montreal game anyway, blah blah blah. All that might be true, but to your point, we don't know.
No, I mean, it's hard to say, because I keep coming back to the fact that this team won six games in a row under Jason Kreis. The team that did that was not the same team that lost the first five or six of the games in this losing streak. He was getting his guys back. We don't know if they would have gotten back into their old form or not. We don't know that. There's no way for us to know that.
Well, not only that, but we didn't even have everybody back. I mean, we're just now waiting for Yoshi to make his way back, from Russia. So,
Right, Yotun would have been the only one, really.
yeah, but how big of a piece is Yotun? I mean,
Oh, big, 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 big.
he's big. So, it's all a lot of what ifs and who knows, and there's nothing to be said about it other than, if there was anybody out there who thought that getting rid of Jason Christ was going to solve all the problems, you were insane.
Well, the problems that I've seen have been throughout the losing streak has been finishing. Finishing didn't get any better after Jason left. It's actually gotten worse.
Yeah.
So I guess we won't beat the dead horse anymore about this. Let's move on to the coaching search. And we had Alex Letao talk to us on Saturday night before the game. He says, Dave, I don't know if you're buying what he's selling. He says, hundreds of interested candidates for the job.
Yeah, that sounds like binders full of stuff, and I'm not buying it.
Hundreds, Dave. Hundreds of candidates. I would. That would. To me, no, I'm not a math whiz. That means at least 200 applicants. You can't get hundreds without at least 200.
You do have to have 200s, and I don't know if there's that many qualified coaches at that level that are calling Alex about this.
Well, it may have just been a figure of speech, maybe just a little hyperbole, but let's say there's a lot of candidates. The next thing, the most interesting thing he said to me on to me, he said it to all of us, but to me, the most interesting thing he said was that the new coach will be expected, Dave, to come in and win with this group. That doesn't mean that they won't make a tweak here and there in the transfer window that's coming up. It doesn't mean that they won't sign anybody or maybe trade somebody. It just means, by and large, this is the group you're winning with. It's not a major rebuild. These are the guys we want to win with, and we think that the coach we hire is going to be able to do that. And the coaches that he has talked to, apparently, have assured him that they can win with this group. So that to me is very interesting on a number of levels. Number one, do you want to hire a coach who doesn't feel strongly about, buying all the
Putting
ingredients
their
for
own
the,
mark on it, right? Yeah.
buying all the ingredients for the meal they're going to cook? Do you trust a coach of that nature? And are you getting the best candidates out there if you put that restriction on them?
Well, all true. The other question that comes to mind for me is, how much ego is there involved? I mean, we spoke about the ego of players earlier, and that, if you ask them if they're good to go, they're always going to tell you, "Yeah, I'm good to go." Is it the same with a coach that's going to go, "Yeah, I can take these guys and I can make a winner"? It might be that. Now, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, but you might have somebody that goes, "Yeah, I can." He can look at the roster and go, "I see the pieces there. I can move this guy here, move this guy there." And I hope that's what it is. I hope it's simply that, somebody's looking at the roster and going, "Yeah, I can make my system, whatever that is, work with the roster that you have." And there are a lot of good pieces. I mean, we spoke before the season, after all the acquisitions were made, of how excited we were at the prospects of, all these guys coming in. And so it's a we're I hate to say it, because it's such a cop out, but we simply have to wait and see who the heck it is before we can even make a really true, honest assessment.
No, and I wasn't suggesting those things. I was asking the question. I was not suggesting that that they
Of course.
that the best coach. I mean, but if you're saying a coach with an ego that thinks he can win with any group, welcome Louis Van Gaal. Welcome. Come on in. Because that strikes me as Louis Van Gaal territory. Anyway, no, what Alex was saying kind of struck me as. He wouldn't name any names, but he kind of struck me as hitting the same notes that kind of everybody's been on the same page as. Paul Tenorio has reported that Caleb Porter has been interviewed for the job. We know Caleb Porter was at the theme parks here recently because that came out on social media. But
Which is
Alex
an
wouldn't.
important part of the job interview.
Yeah,
It's,
Alex wouldn't
how do you do at
say.
Disney and Universal?
Alex wouldn't say, he wouldn't give any names, he wouldn't give any clues or hints, but he did talk about narrowing the candidates down into clusters. One of the clusters is young coaches who are deserving of a shot in MLS. I think you can extrapolate from that James O'Connor and Amark Dos Santos. He talked about coaches that have been successful in MLS. I think you can extrapolate Caleb Porter. And then he talked about other coaches from, as he put it, other ecosystems outside of MLS, overseas, which I think you can tell the names have been out there of Scolari. I know the name Carlos Queiroz has been brought up by some people. I haven't heard it from anybody that I trust as being a potential reality. I don't know what the possibility of that is. Iran just got just got eliminated from World Cup play. In fact, they came within 4 feet of not being eliminated from
Yeah,
World Cup
right,
play.
exactly.
You know, it would be interesting to see if that is an actual possibility. And then, of course, you know, some people brought up Dunga because you got to bring up a Brazilian every time you talk about this club. So, we won't know anything for a while. Alex backed off from his what he told Jordan Culver of wanting to name a, you know, name somebody, you know, put out a name next week. It is that week now. It's, you know, we're in that week that he was talking about, and
That would be right now.
he kind of backed off from that and said, there's not an exact timetable on this. And you know, the only thing I see is that the more games with Bobby Murphy in charge, the further you're going to probably put yourself out of contention. And it's not a knock on Bobby. This is just not what he's, you know, this is not his jam, you know?
Right. And, but, you know, let's. If they were to make a quicker decision and it's the wrong one, then you're not in, you're in just as bad of a situation, maybe worse going forward. So I'm of the mind of, okay, as much as I hate to say it, you know, I know there are people out there who think that we're going to get this incredible coach and it's going to be the right hire and they're going to turn around, they're going to make the playoffs and we're going to win Open Cup and all that. Could that happen? Sure. Personally, I'm staying open to the possibility of that happen, but the realistic part of me is saying, all right, well, you know what? If it takes time to make the right hire, because we have to, there's no choice now. There is no going back. So if I have to sacrifice, and believe me, I don't want to, but if I have to sacrifice this year to get the right person in so that going forward we're better, I'm willing to do that. I hope that that isn't the case. I hope that whoever comes in can turn it around, but at the same time, I'm incredibly realistic about the challenges that are involved in doing that.
Yeah, I'm looking at this realistic too, and I do think they need to get it right, and I do understand the need to take whatever time that entails. On the other hand, the longer this drags out, the worse the timing was of the firing of Jason Kreis, in my opinion.
Agreed. Agreed.
So, and I do want to clarify, I think that Bobby Murphy's a great guy. I think he's a hard worker. He's certainly been a good soldier for the club, and nobody wants to see him win a game more than I do, because he still
Oh,
hasn't done
yeah.
that. He still hasn't done that. I just think that
I
he's in
think
a
the
tough
world of
spot.
him.
I mean, he doesn't, I mean, when Kreis got fired, the assistants went too. I mean, he's on
Yeah.
the bench with the goalkeeping coach and Paul Shaw. I mean, it's not like he doesn't have a lot of help out there. I mean, it's not we joked about Lucas, the you know, from the communications department being an assistant, but you know, it's we're only one or two steps removed from that. So, you know, hopefully Bobby will go out and get a win, even a signature win. That'd be great, this
Yeah, I mean,
Saturday.
right. This is nothing. Don't let any of what we're talking about be misconstrued as we don't respect Bobby. We absolutely do. I mean, he's, like you said, he's a complete and total lying till the day he dies soldier for the club. And I respect the heck out of him. But there's a reason he's in the position he's in and not, you know, coaching someplace. And
Right.
it's not a knock, it's simply a fact.
He's doing the best he can under the circumstances. So, we'll see how it goes the rest of the way. But as of right now, Bobby has now been in charge of the club for 6 games, and two of the th or sorry, yeah, two of those have been losses, and the other four have been draws.
Well, you know what? Yeah,
So at least he's earned some points.
hey, you know, there you go. There's the positive.
He can do that. In fact, I think a couple of those draws were come from behind things back in 2016. So I know I think they were behind 2-0 at Columbus. So, and I'm pretty sure they were behind. It may have been 2 goals at Vancouver. They came back in both of those games to draw. So, in fact, Bobby Murphy, you may not know this, he's one Julio Baptista missed penalty kick from having a win.
That's true. No, I do remember that.
Yeah,
And
if he hadn't missed the net entirely against Vancouver, he would have perhaps given Bobby a win.
The beast was not the best that day.
No, he was not the beast, he was the least on that particular shot.
Dang.
Yeah, I know it's harsh because even Messi misses penalties. Even Ronaldo missed a penalty this week.
Ronaldo missed one,
Yeah,
yes.
so man, it almost sent Portugal home in the end, the way things kind of broke. But
That's an
anyway,
entirely different discussion we're not going to get
yes.
into.
So let's move on. We'll talk a little bit more about Orlando City a little bit later. Let's talk about the Pride at the same time the Lions were playing Montreal. Actually, not exactly the same time because, again, on Saturday, weather delay, this time only a half an hour. So kicking off about an hour as it happened before the Lions, the Pride at the same Maryland Soccerplex in Boyds, Maryland, against the Washington Spirit. And I will say this, Dave, it's the first game for the Pride that I didn't get to see the whole game, but I had my monitor in the press box on that game rather than on the MLS game feed, so that I could keep one eye on it. And in as much as I was able to follow it, and believe me, there were times when I was watching the TV instead of the game out my window, because that's how bad the game out my window was.
Right.
It was not a good soccer game. It was a physical game from Washington, which I assumed that we would see. It was not the crispest performance. I thought that the Pride tried to do a lot of, well, I'm just going to call a spade a spade. I thought they tried to do a lot of dumb things with the ball, like kicking a ball up over the top for Alex Morgan when Alex Morgan was not only by herself isolated, but surrounded by four players. And then just completely overcooking the ball, so she had absolutely no chance anyway. So it was just a lot of, it just seemed like a lack of imagination in the attack. They were susceptible on the counter, although they didn't concede, so that's good. And really lucky to get the win because with former Pride goalkeeper Aubrey Bledsoe wandering just a little too far out from her box, Alana Kennedy said, "I'll take that ball at midfield and I'll put it in the net from here." And goal of the week.
Yes, we found out earlier today Alana Kennedy did get the goal of the week, which was an absolute no-brainer. It was if she was 10 feet past the midline, I'd be shocked.
It was inside the center circle.
It was inside the center circle. I mean, it was picture perfect, and it was one of those. I mean, there's a reason it was goal of the week. It was absolutely beautiful. If you haven't seen it by now and you listen to this podcast, what the heck are you doing? You should have seen it by now. And if you haven't, go watch it. Oh my goodness,
Go look at it.
go look at
Yeah.
it. It was no, it was phenomenal. And it, fortunately, it was all that the Pride needed, for that. Of course, Harris also earned save of the week, so a double for the Pride.
Yep, good save late in the game. Ashlyn wasn't tested that often, but she was able to get to that one. And it was good to get a win against Washington because that's been a team that's, even when they haven't been good, they've given Orlando fits. So getting a win on the road is good. And the Pride, second place in the league, they've gotten points in 9 of the last 10. That's pretty darn good half a season.
Well, not only that, but the first part of that was the stretch that we talked about, where it was on the road and it was going to be tough. And as we head into the later parts, where it's more home games, I mean, 9 out of 10 points. I mean, points. That's it. If you're not if you're worried about Orlando City and the fact that they've lost 7 in a row, I say, well, then Orlando has a team for you. It's called the Pride. Go watch them.
Yeah, and a lot of the tougher matchups are done. They've gone to Chicago twice, they've gone to Portland twice, they've played Seattle 2 of the 3 times they have to play them. They've played the Utah Royals 2 out of the 3 times they have to play them. A lot of the bottom feeders or the lower half teams are coming up the second half of the season for the Pride, and a lot more home games in the second half. So this could be, I mean, it doesn't really look like anybody's going to catch the North Carolina Courage. But
Probably not.
the Pride would be the only team that could do that based on how their schedule's set up. Marta didn't play the whole game. She came on as a second half sub. So, her calf's still not quite there. Plus, she traveled to Brazil in the middle of the week. She had permission to travel home for something, personal reason. And Camilla made the bench, but she's not yet gotten into the swing of things. So, this is a team that's starting to get players back. There's nobody listed as out for tomorrow night as we record this. The podcast will drop on
Woohoo!
Wednesday the 27th. No one's listed as out for the Dash game. Allie Krieger's been upgraded to questionable. So it'll be interesting to see what team Tom Sormani puts out there against the Dash, knowing that the Courage are coming to town on Saturday for an afternoon game.
Very true, and that's two games within 4 days or so, and you hope to get the points against the Dash, but you definitely have to be looking at that Courage game and a way to dig back into them. So the nice thing is that the Pride are pretty deep. There's a lot of talent that Sormani has to use in that, and even if he, let's say, brings Marta in on the 60th minute, you've got Christine Nairn, who has been fantastic this season. I mean, she is, if you want to go watch somebody that's fun to watch Christine Nairn. I mean, she hustles, she does all the right things. She's a good Twitter follow. There's nothing that I don't love about Christine Nairn. I think she's phenomenal. She's always, I mean, her intensity, but also her joy in playing the game, it's fantastic. And that's not even mentioning, obviously, the Martas and the Morgans and the LaRues. And, so there's so much talent. And they're, like you said, they're the only ones that are kind of up there with the Courage in that respect. And especially with the schedule lining up. So it's, I'm extremely excited about the Pride going forward, especially with, even though there's two matches. Actually, I'm really excited there's two matches this week. It's two chances to watch them.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. The thing about the Courage that too is that the Pride have a game in hand on them and two games left with them. So there's actually a real opportunity for the Pride to chase them down. Like I said, if anybody's going to chase them down, it's going to be the Pride. I don't think anyone else is going to do it. But and it may not be possible, but the thing about the Pride is that they only have to beat them once, really, and that's in the playoffs.
Very true, and the way they're playing, gosh, I go back a year ago, and the way that the Pride ended the season to get into the playoffs, if there's any doubt that this team can make the playoffs this year, you're crazy. As crazy as you are if you think that Orlando State's gonna find a coach that's gonna turn them around that quick.
All right, so the Pride and the Dash Wednesday night, 7:30. The Pride and the Courage Saturday at 3:30. That's a Lifetime Game of the Week. If you are in town, go see them, or you will have Ashlyn Harris to deal with. Ashlyn was asked point blank about some of the low attendance this year because Orlando's only had five home games, Dave. Three of them, though, have been on Saturday nights, and one has been on a Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock. Not exactly the time that you can't take your school-age kids to a game. The game's going to be over
So
by
no
seven.
excuses.
Yeah, the game's going to be over by seven. You're going to have them at home in bed by 8 o'clock. There's no reason that nobody could come out for that game. So only one midweek game, and the club's down about 1,000 per game over last year, and they've announced two record lows this year already. Maybe it's just a matter of getting more regular home games, getting the fans back into a rhythm of going out to see the team regularly. Maybe that will help. Certainly the club is in much better form now than it was earlier in the year when it had more home games. It kind of struggled out of the gate because there were a lot of big star players missing at the, you'll recall that the Australians and Brazilians were all missing at the same time. Alex Morgan had some injuries early in the year, so maybe that will help. But Ashlyn was very, she's always very direct and she's always very matter of fact, and she will tell you exactly what's on her mind. And when she was asked, she said, "I don't know what the deal is. We're doing our job. We're playing exciting soccer. We're winning. We're being successful. We've got two of the biggest stars to ever play the game on our team. We've got international players from all over the world. The quality is good. We're doing everything we can on the pitch to fill the stadium. I don't know why the stadium's not being filled. And I concur. I know that there are people that don't like women's sports for whatever reason. They don't think it's as good or whatever. But again, you go back to what you said. This is, if you support Orlando City Soccer Club, well, Orlando Pride are part of that club. And so it wouldn't hurt you to support a team from the club that's winning and doing things kind of the right way.
Not only would it not hurt you, but it just the pure enjoyment of watching some of the best in the world play and win with your colors, it should be worth the price of admission no matter what. My only regret is that I live 4 hours away. I will tell you this: if I lived in Orlando, I would have season tickets to the Pride. I might have season tickets to the Orlando City, but I would absolutely have season tickets to the Pride because I would be taking my girlfriend's daughter to go see them. I mean, talk about women who are role models, who are in it for the love of the game. I mean, obviously they don't make as much money as the men. They are sacrificing more. I mean, it's if you can't respect them, I'm sorry, we try not to be too controversial, but if you can't respect what the women are doing, my respect for you is going to go down a little bit. It's they're too good not to support. And I know that we have readers that do support them. We see them, I talk to them, in the comments all the time. Some of them are fantastic, but it's not enough. We need to have more out there, going to the matches. Ashlyn Harris is absolutely correct in her assessment that they've been doing the work on the field and they deserve to have the support in the stands.
Absolutely. And if you can't, I know people get excited about Messi and Ronaldo. Well, Orlando Pride have Marta, Alex Morgan, Sydney Leroux. They have the same equivalent players on the women's side.
Not to mention Ashlyn Harris, and then up and comers. I mean, heck, I'm a big Carson Pickett fan. She was at FSU. I live in Tallahassee. I think she's great. Yeah, Christine Aaron that I mentioned earlier has been absolutely outstanding all season.
Rachel Hill.
Rachel Hill. Oh my gosh, Rachel Hill coming on off the bench has been phenomenal this year. There's been arguments that she should be in the starting lineup. I can't disagree with that, other than the fact that she's been so good off the bench. It's
been crazy good. Crazy good
she's
team
been
to
crazy.
watch.
Obviously, I'm getting exasperated because I'm a big advocate for the Pride. I'm getting incredibly frustrated over this, and I completely agree with Ashlyn.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to give you a minute to regroup and gather your thoughts,
Thank
Dave, as we're gonna get to our special guest this week. And while Dave composes himself, we'll get to that interview right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, we are happy to have with us the newest Lion. Center back Shane O'Neill, who has just recently been signed and will be eligible to play with the club on July starting July 10th. Shane, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you guys for having me on.
I know you're still in the process of moving and everything and getting everything taken care of, but I want to welcome you to Orlando first of all, and to start off, I just want to say, how did this thing happen with you ending up with Orlando City? How did this all come about?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it starts probably going back to March, I would say. I started to kind of put the feelers out to my agent and stuff like that I was thinking about coming back to the MLS and where I might be interested and stuff like that. And, luckily for me, Orlando was, a really, really great destination in terms of fan support and just the club itself, one of the clubs that's really on the rise within the MLS. And yeah, to be honest with you, it progressed quite quickly. I came out here right when I got back from Rotterdam and really enjoyed the atmosphere at the game and the situation with the team seemed very promising for me at this time in my career. So, yeah, it was a pretty easy decision, to be honest with you.
Now, you mentioned you know, coming back and the team being a good fit. It is an interesting time for you to finally join. You know, with the exit of Jason Kreis and the uncertainty of who the coach is going forward, how has that affected you in the and coming into it? You know, what is that? What challenges has that presented for you?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, pretty interesting time to get in. I think the first day was the day after Jason had been fired for me. But to be honest, the group has been extremely welcoming, and obviously being back on U.S. soil is really nice, and just being back in the MLS. So, I mean, obviously for me, it's kind of a fresh start, no matter who the coach was. So it didn't affect me too much. And obviously I'm just kind of still working on building up my fitness and getting back to top form, and hopefully I'll be able to reach that when the new coach arrives, whenever that may be. And in the meantime, you know, doing everything I can to impress, you know, the current staff and itself.
Shane, when you came here, obviously, excuse me, you looked at the roster and saw what was here, like most players would do that. And you see a Jonathan Spector, a Lamine Sané, and Amro Terek. How much are you looking forward to learning from those experienced veteran guys, and how much are you weighing that against competing with those same guys for playing time?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of experience in that group. Obviously my 3 years in Europe didn't go exactly as planned, I would say, but I think I also gained some really valuable experiences, especially my second season. And even last year, I think, you know, it was a fantastic experience. But, I mean, yeah, the one thing I think that will be huge is being able to kind of, you know, in the Eredivisie, it's like, it's a lot of young players, you know, so to be able to come into a situation like this where you've got a lot of older guys who have kind of been through the ringer. I don't want to say older, but you know, they've just been around longer and seen more. And yeah, it will be interesting. I always like to kind of see and pick the brains and just analyze kind of how they do it. So it will be good. And obviously from a playing time perspective, you know, I'm really confident with what I bring to the table. And, you know, I think if I can kind of do what I believe I'm capable of and what I feel like I've proven in the past when I've been, you know, given opportunities, then I feel good about it. So, yeah, I'm really excited about the coming months and next season as well.
Well, that being said, you know, what is it that you do bring to the table? What do you think that are the best parts of your game?
I definitely think, you know, especially the last couple of years, I mean, I've always fancied myself as being a good central defender in terms of playing out of the back and enjoying to play out of the back and trying to find the winger between the lines and hitting the diagonal ball. But I think definitely the last few years, it's just kind of been honed a lot more, especially coming from places where the system is so drilled and that's what you're expected of you, is just to be able to build out of the back, play out of the back constantly. So I think that's certainly a good part of my game. But, you know, I think the main thing I would always say is my 1v1 defending. I try and take pride in that, try and take, you know, make sure that's always at my best, because at the end of the day, I am a central defender. There's a lot of, you know, I have a lot of room for growth, and I'm excited to keep on working on my game, but I think those are my strong suits.
Now, Shane, I first of all, I had to tell you, I was looking up your I saw your inaugural goal, your first MLS goal on YouTube, and I have to say that's a hell of a screamer that you hit. But I wanted to ask you, what has have you kept up with MLS, and if so, what has changed over the few years since you left Colorado and now you return as a member of Orlando City?
I mean, the changes have been insane, to be honest with you. I have kept up with the league quite well, especially players that I was friendly with, one of being Dylan Powers, which is kind of funny. So I did follow Orlando quite closely while I was gone. But, I mean, just to see the growth is the real, I mean, you see these sold-out stadiums, and you see the younger players coming across, and the U.S. internationals wanting to go back earlier and earlier. I mean, it's leaps and bounds, really. I think the main thing definitely being the support, I would say, and the passion. You see these new clubs, obviously Orlando being one of them. I don't believe when I left, the stadium hadn't been built yet. So, obviously you see the stadium here, and you just kind of go across the board really with it, and you see Atlanta and all these other teams that were sprouting up, LAFC with these new amazing stadiums that they're packed. It's pretty amazing to see that. So I for me, like, that's what I see as the big change, is just teams with a bit of culture, teams with a bit of passion and pride. Because I think when I left, it was there, but it not like it is now.
So is that what was prompting your interest in coming back to MLS, or was it that and something else? What was it?
For me, I think, going over to Europe and playing as an American, it's obviously it's a big challenge, because I think you really need to find yourself in the right situation. You need to find yourself with a coach who kind of believes in you and a team that kind of takes you in for kind of who you are as a player. And I think at NAC Breda, that's kind of how I felt. Like, they really kind of embraced, me as a player. The coach embraced me, and I ended up having the best season of my career. Sometimes you feel like you're kind of like, fighting a losing, just you're out there on your own, kind of grinding and fighting, and maybe not received the same way. And so, especially now when I come back, and I see, I can kind of look at it from the other perspective, and you see these guys coming from South America and all these other places, maybe by themselves. You can definitely look at it from the perspective of, like, I was kind of in that position. Like, I need to be able to reach out or help this guy if I can, or help this guy feel confident when he's on the ball, and because those things are important. And I think, for me, that was the biggest reason I wanted to come back, is to kind of hit the reset button a little bit. I felt like I had an amazing experience. I think if one or two breaks, kind of, if one or two injuries could have been avoided, I could have really kicked on to the next level. But I have no regrets, and I'm really happy to be in Orlando. And so I just look at it as kind of like, this is a fresh start for me, where I can really rebuild as an athlete, being able to try and stay healthy on the field and as a player, and kind of really bring all the things I learned from Europe back to the MLS, and really try and thrive back here.
Now, Shane, you were a member of the U.S. Men's youth teams. Is it on your radar at all to come back to MLS to get in good form and maybe get back in the conversation to get another look from the national team setup?
Of course, I mean, absolutely. That's a goal of mine. I'm under no illusions, though, at the same time. A lot of things have to, go the right way. A lot of things, you need to, lucky breaks. You need to play well on the right day. But at the same time, I know that when I've been at my best in the past, it's been very good. And I think for me, consistency and staying healthy is going to be very important. And if I can do that, I definitely, in my mind at least, am not putting up any boundaries to what can be achieved with Orlando at all. And yeah, I mean, obviously, I think I'd be lying if I told you that I didn't have one eye on hopefully coming back, getting into form, getting into top shape, and making another run at that.
Now, obviously, you're not available for selection until after, you know, July 10th. I think Toronto is the next game after that. You've been, you know, you've been here for a little bit. You mentioned that you know Dylan Powers. How has your experience been since you've gotten to Orlando? I mean, obviously you're moving and setting up phones and all kinds of other stuff. But as far as meeting the guys and getting involved with the team itself, how's that been?
I think it's been quite good. Obviously, like you said, it's kind of an interesting time, and I'm not available for selection, so it kind of makes my situation a little bit interesting. You know, obviously, the team right now really needs to focus on the results coming up, and obviously, I can't be involved with that, regardless if I even if I could be involved. I'm just saying, like, obviously, it's a moot point because, I'm not available. So in terms of that, it's been a little bit interesting, but on a whole, I mean, if I'm being honest with you, the club is fantastic. You know, I mean, it's the guys have been incredibly welcoming. I mean, from the first day, you know, you have stuff that's, you know, you can get taken care of in terms of, you know, dietary or medical, whatever it kind of seems to be, it's taken care of, which is something I'm definitely not used to coming from. And, you know, it really makes you appreciate kind of what you have here in the MLS, and even in the past in the MLS, something I'm not accustomed to. So in terms of, you know, the setup of Orlando City, it's as good as I've seen in my career. So that's been a pleasure. And, I think training, other than the absolutely insane heat, has been pretty good. But, yeah, that heat is no joke.
Yeah, it's not exactly Holland here.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Before we let you go, Shane, you mentioned Dylan and you guys played together in Colorado. How instrumental has he been in getting you kind of settled and situated here in Orlando?
Oh, I mean, I couldn't speak highly enough, to be honest with you. He's been like a truly great person for me the last week or 10 days, I would say. You know, just always reaching out to see how things are going. I really couldn't have been able to transition this easily without him. He's a great guy, so it's really nice to have someone like him around. And you know, I say this to Dylan a lot. You know, I've seen him do things on a training pitch that not a lot of players can do. So I'm excited to kind of be able to push each other again and hopefully see him kind of get back in the 11 and start really making a push again. Because I think, you know, not only from off the pitch standpoint where he's been fantastic, but I think, I'm really looking forward to being able to see him day in, day out on the training field again, because he's a top player. And I think once he gets that kind of personality and swagger and confidence back, it's gonna be really nice. So I'm looking forward to being able to push each other on the pitch as well.
Yeah, he's been kind of a mystery for Orlando City fans because he hasn't gotten a lot of playing time, and the team hasn't been really that good over the last year and a half. But you know, they just see the guy with the crazy headband out there every once in a while. But you've seen him up close and personally. You've seen him during, you know, some of his best moments. And of course, he's a former MLS Rookie of the Year, so he's obviously got talent. You got any good Dylan Power stories to share with us before you go?
Oh God. To be honest, in terms of funny, I'm not sure I have too many. He's a pretty even keel guy, but the one thing I would say in terms of who he is as a player, I remember there was one off season where I was training with Reading, and he had just trained with Reading prior to me getting there. So he was at Reading for like 10 days. This is a championship club in England. Mm-hmm. And he left. And this was when I was playing in Belgium. And I had just left the Belgian club, so I went to Reading. on like a, you know, 10-day kind of just train to stay fit. And I remember getting there and, you know, guys like Anton Ferdinand and all these guys being like, oh, you knew that Dylan Powers guy. And I was like, yeah. And, you know, every one of them being like, you know, hopefully we get this guy as soon as possible and sign him up, you know, and get the paperwork done, because he was a hell of a player. So, you know, I always have that in the back of my mind. I mean, I came away from the championship club and all these guys saying, like, we need to get this guy in our team as soon as possible. So I think that kind of tells you everything you need to know about what kind of player he is.
All right. Well, Shane O'Neill, again, welcome to Orlando, and thank you so much for being our guest on the Mainland Podcast. We hope to have you again sometime.
Awesome. All right. Take care, guys. Thank you.
All right. It's good to have Shane O'Neill aboard here in Orlando. You know, it was good talking to him, and I hope that he has a bright future here.
Absolutely. Well, look, as a Irish, not quite as Irish as he is, but as an Irish American, I'm glad to have him, because it's always good to have more of us.
Yeah, sure. I'll take your word for it. I have nothing against it. I have Irish blood. I will definitely not be throwing any stones. Anyway, Dave, it's time for our mailbag. You can ask the Mainland Podcast anything. And you can do that in one of two ways. You can hit us up on Twitter. Our Twitter account is @TheMainland, and we'd like you to use that podcast hashtag of AskTMLPC, #AskTMLPC, and that stands for Ask The Mainland Podcast. And you can also do it the old-fashioned way, emailing us, themainland@gmail.com is how you do that. So we've got a couple of emails, we've got a couple of tweets, and we're going to get to those, and I'll start us off, Dave, with some questions from the email bag. Start with friend of the pod, Lee Gavlik. Because why not?
Yeah, sure.
So Lee has a question that I'm assuming is semi-serious and semi-not serious. He wants to know, our Sasha question and Justin Merrim, in fact, Terminator-esque cyborg sent from the future to destroy Orlando City SC? Lee, I would say no. I would say that I personally think that the disdain or the negative comments towards Sasha and Justin Merrim have been loud. They've been quite numerous, but I also think that they're largely unwarranted. I think that those two players do a lot of things that are good on the field, and they don't always come off, but they are showing more creativity than most of the players on the field. I think that they've put their team in a position to score goals. They each have a few assists. Sasha's got a few goals. Justin's got one, and plus a kind of a big one in the U.S. Open Cup, because without that, there's no penalty shootout. It was a little luck involved, but hey, you got to be good to be lucky sometimes. So I would say both of those individuals are trying. They're doing what they can. They're not always put in the best positions to succeed. And honestly, I'm not quite certain that they work together that well in terms of the fact that Justin's right-footed. Sasha doesn't seem to like to drift left, but Justin does like to drift inside. And so they sometimes occupy the same space, and it kind of breaks down a lot of plays. I don't think it's their fault. They're the players they are. This club went out and got them. So, you know, clearly there was a plan that we can make these guys work in the same lineup, and it hasn't really gelled yet. But I think that, and we've asked them this, it's not something that just comes together right away sometimes. Some of these partnerships, you know, it's all well and good when you can point to LAFC, or if you can point to Atlanta and say, well, look at those guys. They just signed a couple guys, and they're working really well together. That's great. Sometimes it happens, and sometimes it does not. And this looks like a case where it has not happened. It hasn't gelled yet. And maybe the new coach will make that happen, and maybe it won't. I thought that Sasha looked good in the U.S. Open Cup game, operating deeper, where he wasn't in Justin's way and wasn't running into those same spaces. I don't know, Dave, what do you think?
I think that you went with the entirely logical answer that was serious. And so since we know this question was also maybe not so serious, I'm going to go with the not so serious and say that, yes, they are indeed actually cyborgs from the future who have come back to try and destroy Orlando City. And they appear, like in the movie, they appear to be doing a good job of it initially. However, I think that they'll both get a heart like Terminator did in T2. And eventually... It will all come around, and we'll get a big thumbs up from both of them as they drown in molten lava.
Let's hope they don't drown in molten lava.
No, of course. Okay. Just not. But I had to continue with the thing.
All right. So James wants – thank you, Lee, for the question. James wants to know in the email, since MLS is different from other leagues in the amount of travel required, the number of hot games played, the number of midweek games scheduled, MLS Open Cup – would it be a good idea to increase the number of subs allowed from 3 to 4 or 5? This would contribute to player health and game quality. This would also allow players who are in good shape but not 90-minute shape to play and contribute, such as players coming back from injuries. What do you think of that idea, Dave?
It's interesting. I don't see it ever happening, but he's not wrong. It would do all the things that he says that it would do. Mm-hmm. However, given that MLS is a part of a larger, you know, global marketplace, I just don't see it happening, especially as MLS is trying to establish themselves as, you know, a league among the other premier leagues in the world. So I don't think that they would do so.
Yeah,
but like I said, he's not wrong. I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah, I don't disagree that it would probably be more qualitative soccer. I think it would be a good thing in a lot of ways, but I think you're right. I think that the big European leagues would sneer even more at than they already do at MLS. And, oh, look, those babies need 4 or 5 subs. And, you know, it's not real football. And
which is unimaginable given how much they already sneer. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't see it happening, but I do think that this would be a league that would lend itself to that. I wouldn't go above 4. I think it's a good idea, but I think that maybe you get those 3 subs, but you get a 4th in case of an actual real injury, which means, you know, if the player goes down and needs to be subbed and you have only the 4th sub left, maybe that player can't play in the next game just to make sure that they're actually hurt and not just, taking a dive or faking an injury or whatever. To get the sub. I think it's, you know, there would need to be maybe a consequence there. I'm just spitballing here, Dave.
Your spitballing is incredible. That was a very, I was going to say thought out, but you just said you were spitballing, but that was a very nuanced answer you just gave there. So well done, sir.
Thanks. I've clearly given that seconds worth of thought. But yeah, no, I'm a guy who can take ideas and run with them, Dave. I guess that's what I'm good at. James also had another second thing he put in here, but it's not phrased as a question, so I don't know if it's a question. But he says he would like to see the player who earns a penalty kick be the one who takes the penalty kick. That player should be rewarded for what they did, not another player who steps up and gets credit for a goal. While the PK earner is soon forgotten. Think of the drama this could set up. Interesting concept. I don't know that I would want somebody necessarily to take a penalty kick that was fouled necessarily. Like, I don't know if Chris Schuler got fouled in the box on a corner kick that I would want him taking the penalty. Nothing against Chris Schuler.
Nothing against Chris.
He might be a fine penalty taker.
But we don't know.
That's right. But I think I'd rather go with Yoshimar Yotun, maybe.
Right.
But yeah, it is strange, you know. A lot of times, the guy who takes the foul is
in basketball,
right? I mean, a lot of times the guy that takes the foul in the box is, you know, like he's got a dead leg for a minute, you know, because he's taking a shot, and
sure.
You know, sometimes they it's not a good idea for them to take it. I mean, you know, you take a knock to the knee, or you take a hit to the solar plexus and you got the wind knocked out of you a little bit. Maybe that's not the best time for you to step up and in a big moment, but I understand where you're coming from. It would be an interesting rule. I don't support it though.
I don't either, because and here's why. It's one of those, it when you're looking at it on the face, you're like, yeah, because that guy that's taking the penalty kick against us is not that good if it's the guy that had the penalty, and instead they don't stick Harry Kane up there against us.
Yeah.
But if it's your team, you're like, oh, no, 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 I want Yoshimaru Yotun to take that for me. Please, please, please. Thank you.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I see it. And like I said, it just sometimes it's just not feasible. You know, sometimes a guy needs a few minutes to recover from some of the hits they take that create those penalties. So what are you going to do? Just like guy gets stretchered off and then you got to wait till he's ready to return to do the penalty. I don't think that would work. So anyway, thanks, James, for the email. Dave, you got some questions via the Twitter box.
We do. So we've got a one that was a little bit after we recorded the last one. I asked the following about a 5-4-1 with the three center backs, U.S. Open Cup, 3-4-3 was more or less the same point. This was Ryan Smith. You actually already alluded to this, and you gave him a shout-out.
Yeah, I did.
Never mind. So we're going to go past that one. So next, it's okay. We've got more here. Let me get to it. Cameron Hughes says, Letal, and of course he's referring to Alex, stated clearly in his press conference that, quote, this is not a rebuild, and that, quote, this is our group. With this roster, is there any foreseeable change coming in the 18 players we select every game, or are we just supposed to figure it out as is per the front office?
Oh, I think that you'll see some changes to the 18. I think this is a deep enough team that when everybody's healthy, you can see some changes to the 18. But I also think that when the window comes, some things could happen. I mean, we don't know how much interest that Yoshimaru Yotun's World Cup performances have drummed up in him. That's a case where maybe somebody makes an offer that the club can't turn down, and then they'll use turn around, try to flip that TAM money. Yoshi's a TAM player. They can just turn around and flip that and pay for somebody else to come in and take that spot. There's some solid defensive midfielders on this team somebody might be in need of. So there's some possibility of some personnel changes. I do expect at least some change in this window. And, God, I hope the team can bring in a striker.
Yeah, well, so to answer Cameron's question, yes, this is our group. Whoever comes in is going to be expected to deal with the group as it is, at least initially. Right. Like you said, there are some things that could change. You mentioned defensive midfielders. Obviously, I think you're thinking of Christian Higuita, who has had a fairly good year and might be worth some money. Mm-hmm. It's all going to depend really on how soon we get the coach in and how much time he has to scout, or if he already has people on his scouting list that he wants to bring in based on who already is ever here. The questions are way more numerous than any answers that we or the club have at this time. So, Alex was very clear that they went out and they made acquisitions based on the guys that they think are good. And I don't necessarily disagree with them. I think that, I mentioned earlier in the podcast, I think Mueller was an incredible acquisition. I think that, as you mentioned not too long ago, both Marin and Kleshin could potentially work together. It is a deep team. We just haven't seen any of it because we've had, between injuries and international call-ups, we haven't ever had the entire team together. So, but you're right. We need a striker. So,
very few games together for the initial group. But I do think that there'll be some movement. There always is. I think that I just think that there. It really does depend on the coach. I mean, if you bring in a coach, let's say you brought in Jesse Marsh right now. As I said, all of a sudden Jesse Marsh became available, and you brought him in. Well, he's already shown that he's willing to part with Sasha Kleshin because of his high energy, high pressing, high up the field, in your face, system that he thinks Sasha might not be suited for that anymore. So he's going to, a coach like that who has a system that requires certain attributes from certain players, not everybody on this roster is going to fit what that guy wants to do. So, if you bring in another 4-2-3-1 guy who's possession based, you know, he's got the players he needs. If you bring in somebody that runs something completely different, he might not have the pieces that he needs. So I think that what I think I understand where Alex is coming from, and Alex did say that there's always one or few, you know, one or two changes, but I think he wanted to really stress that he doesn't think that this roster needs to be overhauled. I think he's basically saying, fans, we promise this is not going to be another major rebuild, you know, the third one
Right.
already. But I don't, it's disingenuous to make that promise until you know who your coach is going to be.
Correct. And it sends all kinds of bad messages, but you know, we yeah it, that says maybe.
And we've all been in job interviews where we say, oh yeah, totally, I know how to do that. And then you go home and you Google it.
I yes, but I really hope that our next coach is not Googling how to soccer.
That's right. But you know, we've all said, you know, promised that we would do things for a new employer to get hired. That doesn't
Right. Yeah,
necessarily
I know Excel.
mean that we're always being our most absolute truthful at that time. All right, what else we got in that Twitter box?
Yeah, we've got David Valentine. Is this season salvageable, realistically speaking? And should Orlando City go all in on the Open Cup if playoffs are out of reach?
I would say that yes, it's potentially salvageable, but it really needs to start happening even before the new coach is hired. That there needs to be some points earned here in the interim to keep the team right around the line if it's got any chance of happening. A lot of times, what happens, what you saw at the beginning of the year, even with Giovanni Savarese in Portland, is struggles to connect, struggles to get everybody on the same page. But once they got rolling, I mean, I don't think they've lost a game since Orlando City beat them. You know, Portland has shown that they can play under him. So if that situation happens, yeah, I think they're going to need a few points to kind of tread water. I don't know if those points are coming, but it is certainly possible that it could happen. And as far as going all in on the Open Cup, I mean, look, you're playing MLS teams from here on out unless Louisville City gets through. So you have to play your best to you have to go all in on it. And you kind of maybe if you're a team like Orlando that's lost 7 games in a row in the league play, maybe you need to hope that the other team doesn't go all in on it too, just to get that little edge.
Yeah, indeed, and I think this has always been one of those, you know, cut the baby in half questions for me. I don't know that it has to be an either or thing. I get that with injuries and time played, as we saw with, you know, guys going 120 minutes, that it sometimes can be forced to be an a either or. But if you work the roster correctly, it doesn't have to be. Do we go in for the Open Cup? Yeah, of course we do. I mean, we've made it as far as we've made it before. Why not continue to try and get further? So yeah, put the best lineup that you have available at the time. At the same time, you know, all right, so we've got Atlanta coming up. Do we expect Bobby Murphy to, you know, not put the best lineup out there? No, of course not. So for me, it's never been a either or proposition, and I would hope that the club wouldn't do so. Now, that being said, I mean, we saw what happened to Toronto early in the year when they were in champions, CONCACAF champions. But I don't know, it's a really hard question. Is the season salvageable? Realistically speaking, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm not. I'm going to be the pessimist this time. I know usually I'm the optimist. I'm going to be the pessimist. I'm going to say it's looking dimmer and dimmer every week, and I don't necessarily expect it to get any brighter because, frankly, you know, you have to get the new coach in, and like you said, unless he's a Jason Christ doppelganger, which if he is, that's not going to solve any of the problems, or it may, depending on what's going on. But regardless, changing a coach midseason is never, ever, ever a good thing. And it's going to make it tough no matter what.
Right. And even though people will say, well, what about Seattle 2 years ago? Well, this isn't Seattle 2 years ago.
Because
that was an
there's
internal
always an
hire.
outlier.
Yeah, there was an out, that was an internal hire. It was a guy who knew the players. They had an informed Clint Dempsey, an informed Jordan Morris, one of the deepest rosters in MLS. That was not the same thing at that time. So, yeah, you're
And
right.
there's
It was an
always
outlier.
an outlier.
Exactly. It's the same thing that I always say to, well, you know, the Atlanta came in and was successful right away. That should have been us. Well, it's not normal. It's not normal. It's just not the norm. It's not what normally happens. Yes, it's possible. And like I said, it was still salvageable. That doesn't mean I believe that it'll be salvaged. That just means that I think it's possible.
Exactly. I could not agree more. All right. One last one, and this one's a fun one from returned friend of the podcast, Mark Johnson. Who would you pick as the next coach out of anyone ever?
That's pretty freaking easy for me. I'm going to say treble era Sir Alex Ferguson.
Okay, just gonna leave it that. Just you know,
That's all I
whatever.
need.
Yeah, sure.
What else do you need? I
That's
mean,
like
if you're going with somebody from that's currently coaching, I mean, anybody in the world, Pep Guardiola, that's not gonna
well,
happen.
sure, because no, it's not.
But
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to, my answer is a very specific one, and it's in regards to Mark Johnson, who is a Toffee. I'm going to go with Jurgen Klopp just to annoy Mark, and for my own satisfaction of having somebody that lively on the sidelines giving hugs to the Orlando City Lions.
All right. Well, that'll do it for our mailbag, right, Dave? That's it.
That's everything I got.
All right. Well, thanks for everybody for your questions. We appreciate it. You can ask us anything on Twitter. At the Mainland is our Twitter account. Hit us up with that hashtag AskTMLPC or email us at themainland@gmail.com. Dave, before we get out of here, we want to mention again the Pride are at the Dash tonight if you're getting this the day it lands. Wednesday night, of course, the 27th, and they host the Courage on Saturday at 3:30. But Orlando City is going to Atlanta Saturday night. I need your key matchups and your score prediction for the rivalry that doesn't have a name because it's not really a rivalry yet.
Right. Although, to be fair, I don't really like
What
those guys.
do we call it, the Southeast Showdown? Isn't that what we decided that
That's
would be
I,
called?
yeah, it was the Southeast Showdown, or I don't remember. I care and I don't care. You're right. All right. Anyway, my key matchup is going to be it's in the midfield. They've got Almiron, they've got Barco, Ken Higuita, Rozelle. If we have Yoshi back, is he able to do anything? It's all about how the midfield can play against those guys and potentially slow them down, because they are great. They have a lot of firepower and they score bunches. Especially with Villalba and Martinez up top. I hate doing this, but my prediction, unfortunately, is going to be a 3-1 loss. The Lions continue the losing streak, and I have to deal with my Atlanta friend here in town.
Yeah, I think the key matchup for me is certainly in the midfield because Atlanta likes to turn you over and then break you down in transition, and that's certainly something Orlando's been susceptible to. I specifically think the key matchup will be on the right side of Orlando City and the left side attack of Atlanta because we typically see Almiron on that side. And he's the guy who can start a two-pass sequence for a breakaway at any given moment. So don't turn the ball over, Christian Aguita. Don't turn the ball over, Will Johnson or Scott Sutter, whoever's on the right side. Just don't do it because then you're yanking it out of Joe Bendick's net. And I see the prediction here as 4-1 Atlanta.
Had to one up me.
I was going to say 3-1, but you took it. So I didn't want to be a copycat. So I
That's
said.
Been a, be a copycat one time. All That's right. Every time I, like the last 3 weeks, I've stolen your prediction. Just go ahead and copycat me once.
Yeah. So somehow Orlando City gets a phantom penalty the way that Atlanta did a few weeks ago and gets a goal from the spot and then still gets absolutely waxed because I just don't think this team is in a good spot mentally right now. That's how I see it breaking down.
Yeah, no, it's we're both predicting a multi-goal loss, so I think we'll both be correct, although maybe not on the exact scoreline.
Well, the fact is, I watched Portland Atlanta last weekend, and I saw Joseph Martinez miss at least three sitters that he will never miss again in his life. And I said, that's going to hurt Orlando next week because next week he's just going to be deadly. He's going to be scoring goals that he has no business scoring since he missed these goals he had no business missing.
Of course.
Because that's how it goes.
Yeah, well, our only hope is that they make that Everton move very, 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 very quickly. Like today.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, the rumor is that Everton has an eye on Joseph Martinez. I don't know if that's accurate because it's the silly season and you never know what's true in the silly season.
And of course I'm conflicted.
I recall Everton being linked to Kyle Larin at one point. That didn't happen.
No, it did not. And of course I'm conflicted because as a Liverpool fan, I don't want Everton to have any nice things at all. But at the same time, I also don't want Martinez to stay at Atlanta. So I can't win in this scenario. Just can't win.
Can't win. Don't try. Bart Simpson.
Well, no, that was Homer Simpson that said, you tried and you failed. The lesson is don't try.
Yeah, I think also that there was a line from Bart that said, yep, can't win, don't try.
You're probably right. Well, obviously something he learned from Homer.
Well, so, see, he's not such a bad dad after all, was he?
I don't think he actually was. I really don't. You go back and look. Sorry, folks, we're going to go off on a slight tangent here. If you go back and look, Homer's actually not a bad dad. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's not a great dad. But he cares about – well, he doesn't care about the kids. But, you know, he kind of does.
He does when it suits him. But, yeah, generally speaking, you shouldn't choke your children.
Why are you?
Anyway, with that, I think we will put a bow on episode number 131. I definitely had a good time. Not so much talking about Orlando City, but talking certainly to Shane O'Neill and talking about the Pride. And I think
absolutely.
And of course, hearing from our listeners and answering their questions. So we will be back to do it again next week. We'll talk about Orlando City and Atlanta United, the big Southeast showdown that has never been won by Orlando City yet. We will talk about the pair of Pride matches. We have so much Pride this week. We have a double dip of our beloved Pride.
And so enjoy it, for goodness sake. So, go enjoy it. They might win.
Pride Dash and Pride Courage, all of the singular nickname teams playing, except the Spirit, which was last week, and the Rain. Oh, my God. They're all – I think everybody put the Thorns and the Royals. And
they're so efficient.
Yeah. So I remember when there were no singular name teams, and then it seemed really weird that there needed to be a team named the Magic, you know, or something like that. just – and the Heat. Those were odd additions to the sports world at the time. But, so we'll be back to talk about a couple of Pride games. We'll be back to talk about Orlando City. And who knows? We might have more to talk about on the coaching search by the next time that you and I speak. And we will, of course, be previewing the early part of July, which includes Orlando City's first ever trip to LAFC. And the summer just rolls on with a lot more to talk about, and we'll be back to do it next week. So thanks again to Shane O'Neill. Thanks to Rafa Cabrera from the Orlando City front office for setting that for us. And I would like to tell you to please read our stuff at themainland.com. Subscribe to this here podcast. If you're downloading it every week, that's great. We appreciate that. But if you subscribe, it's even better for us. That's awesome.
And if you write a 5-star review, that's even
Yeah,
better.
then we'll read on the air whenever I remember to look. Whenever I remember to look and see one, then I'll read it on the
It
air.
will get read.
Yeah,
Doesn't matter when Michael looks. We'll read it.
it will. Sometimes it's 2 or 3 episodes before I like, but and this has been a crazy week. But anyway, read our stuff, like us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook, or other way around, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. And on that note, on behalf of Dave Rowe, I am Michael Citro, the managing editor and founder. I can't even speak of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do by saying, Go City and Go Pride.